The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Is this your first time in Seattle?
No, this is actually my third time in Seattle. I was here the first time for a ASP.NET alpha design review, where they showed us, before anybody else got to see, what they were doing, what they were planning on doing with ASP.NET 2.0. And so we got to stay up here for 3 days. They put us up and chilled with Rob Howard and a couple other guys for a bit. And second time was for the MVP Summit last year. So it's been fun.
Yeah. You really haven't had an opportunity to explore much of Seattle then, since every time you've been here, it's been for geek things.
Not really. When I was here for the MVP Summit, got together with Robert Scoble and a bunch of other people, went down to the fish market, got to see the first Starbucks.
Pike's and, Place, yeah.
Yeah, hang around there for a while. I went to hang out with a friend of mine. I didn't know exactly where her office was, and so I ended up walking around downtown Seattle for like an hour and a half trying to find out where she worked. So I've seen a bit of Seattle, but not all that much. I stayed with Robert the last time I was here for the MVP, for the Whidbey Alpha. And so his place is cool up in Bothell, went down to Kirkland for a bit, but I haven't seen a whole lot.
You're throwing around terms that not everybody's going to be familiar with. Uh-oh. You're talking about ASP.NET. Now, is this a programming platform? Is this something that programmers use to develop applications on Windows?
Yeah, this is the successor to the wonderful internet programming platform known as ASP, or the VB Programmers Web Paradise. It's ASP for the .NET framework, so it runs on Windows Server 2003. It actually will run on Apache using Mono as well, so probably.
And Mono is a .NET framework that allows for cross-platform applications?
Right. The .NET framework is Microsoft only, but it's based on what's called the Common Language Infrastructure, and that is a ECMA standard that can run on, it runs on, if I'm not mistaken, OS X, it runs on Apache, Linux, and there's one other, I forget what it is.
Are there any other operating systems that, VMS maybe?
No, I don't think so.
Well, you never know. It's been a while since I've used VMS. So, you know, for the end user, it's just another way that programmers could create things.
Right. It's a virtual runtime, kind of like Java. Only with Java, you have one programming language, Java. With the .NET framework, you have, the common language infrastructure, which lets you map some programming languages to the intermediate language. So I think they have 22 different flavors or different languages for the .NET framework. You can program in COBOL, Perl. There's tons. It's,
wow.
It's crazy.
I didn't realize it worked that way.
Yeah. So VB and C# are the big ones. That's the one everybody talks about. J# is almost a direct port of Java over to the .NET framework. And then you have some experimental languages. There's X#. There's F#. Microsoft
crackers.
Research. Yeah.
Wait, J#, F#. Wait, what is? What are all these distinctions?
Well, first you had, C and C++, and then they wanted another symbol to throw in there to show it's kind of like C, but not really. And so they used a pound sign. And so now every time Microsoft Research comes up with a new language, they come up with a letter and a pound sign after it.
God, why? Why does the world need that many programming languages?
I don't know, but there's some people out there that still like programming in Mod, Perl, and COBOL, and whatever. So.
Well, I can tell you, coming from Iowa, where insurance is huge, there is a huge demand for COBOL programmers.
Yeah.
Which is very much true, and very strange, considering COBOL really hasn't you know, done anything with itself for
no.
decades.
No, but there are still people that program on it. So you can have a language add-on where it'll interpret COBOL into .NET and run using all the managed memory and all the .NET framework classes or the programming libraries that you can interact with.
So .NET is really closer to, I hesitate to say open standard, but if you're saying that through, is it the Mono libraries, they could be ported to other platforms?
Well, Microsoft put out, when they put out the .NET framework, they put out the CLI, and they ratified it by the ECMA. So it is a standard open framework. When they did that, they also released a reference architecture, which could be compiled to run on Unix platforms or OS X and the like. So it's open in that they submitted it as standards the same way they've submitted web service standards and those kind of things. And so Mono is an open source project that is run by a company called Zimian that I believe was acquired by Novell.
Yes.
And so they take the .NET framework and the concepts and map the classes that Microsoft put together for Windows onto other platforms.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah.
I had no idea that like I said, that even existed until recently through another developer, Brandon Paddock.
Okay.
Had mentioned that to me, the Mono, I guess, project, libraries. I don't know exactly the right distinction, right label for it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I know Mono, which usually is something that you don't want.
Yeah.
You know, if you get Mono, that's
my
a bad
girlfriend
thing.
Had it. It was really bad.
I can only imagine. I've never suffered from anything like that. In fact, just the opposite. Usually I have Duo, which is twice as bad as Mono. And that's when you're too energetic and you can't get anything done. That's Duo.
Isn't that a attention deficit disorder?
Well, that's what they say in the trades, as we call them in the industry of ADD folks. So you also mentioned another... I'll call it jargon, or it's another code name, WIDB, and this is known to developers.
That's correct. WIDB is the code name, just like Longhorn's a code name, for the next version of Microsoft's development platform, which is Visual Studio. And they apparently, it's called the .NET framework, and they've called previous versions like Visual Studio .NET, but they've gotten rid of .NET. For Visual Studio 2005, and you've seen the .NET name kind of disappear from a lot of Microsoft's server platforms. Before, they were .NET Enterprise servers, and people said, well, gosh, what's this whole .NET thing, and what does it mean, and why did you just add .NET to every single server product that you own, even though most of them didn't include .NET? In fact, like SQL Server doesn't, or just now in SQL Server 2005 includes the .NET runtime built in. So instead of writing database code in what's called SQL or TSQL language, you can actually write code in any of the .NET languages, VB, C#, COBOL,
so
whatever.
So this is making programming easier.
Making programming a lot easier.
And when you say that, and again, I'm looking at this from a non-developer, you know, point of view, and I would go as far as to say is a large majority of our listeners aren't developers, and they get lost when, you know, you start talking programming languages.
Right.
So how does that translate? How does it trickle down?
Trickle down through...
Well, you start with the programmer, or I guess you could start with the platform, the development platform, then the programmer. What does it mean to the user, or for the end user? Maybe
well,
in a corporate environment, or, you know, at home?
Well, I mean, using code or managed framework like Java or .NET allows you to take advantage of certain capabilities in terms of memory management. Whereas before, if you wrote in the language that Windows is written in, you have to worry about your own memory management. So a lot of your time is taken up solving just really basic problems that everybody has to solve over and over again. With Java and with .NET, you have the capability to forget about those kind of things because it's built into the runtime. So I can focus more on, you know, user-related problems, like how do I display information to them in a way that makes sense, or how do I move information from one system through web services or through the internet to another system. Those are the kinds of problems that really need to be solved in terms of, you know, making information available anywhere. And then with WIDBI and 2.0, now we're starting to look at laying the foundation for the next series of problems that needed to be solved. And especially in around WinHack, talking about this is the third generation of Windows and the third generation of computing, I really feel that this generation is more about end-user problems. We've solved the basic problems of how to get a computer to work. We've solved the basic problems on how to get computers to talk to each other. Now we have to solve the problems on how do we do all that well, and how do we make it seamless, like you're plugging in your VCR, or it, to be able to interact with it in a way that doesn't make you want to pick up your monitor and throw it out your window. Mm-hmm. And for end users, you're going to start seeing, hopefully, and it's been a topic of great discussion even with you and your blog, hopefully with this next wave, you'll be able to see programs that really are easier to use. Because at the end of the day, programmers and developers aren't the ones that are designing the way you interact with it. There are people who are trained to understand how humans interact with things that are able to create interfaces and really great programs with really slick, a really slick experience. And even though Windows XP is called Windows Experience, you still don't get that right now.
It's not a very good experience.
No.
And I say that, you know, and I know there are alternatives out there, but the more I look at it, it really put things in perspective at WinHack, which I also had the opportunity to attend through, you know, I was lucky enough to be involved with certain community mm-hmm. programs here in Seattle, and specifically Microsoft. So, you know, it was my first WinHack experience, and, you know, not being a developer, it was interesting. Being there is just, you know, what I would consider myself a power user, so coming mm-hmm. in, you know, wearing that hat. When they started displaying the stuff they were working on with Longhorn, where they were at with this particular build, mm-hmm. I was appalled. I mean, I was taken aback with, geez, this is what you've been working on all this time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that doesn't resonate with me. I've lost a lot of confidence. I almost feel, you know what, this is what it feels like. You know, hearing, you know, Longhorn, just wait.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the buzz that came before the Phantom Menace.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
And then, at WinHack, what we saw on screen was the Phantom Menace. It was like, wow, that was kind of, and then it just left you not even wanting more, but just wanting to walk away.
Right.
It was just, and I understand it's a developer thing, but when you put this stuff out there, and then people, especially the power users, see mm-hmm. this stuff, we become disillusioned, completely
right.
disillusioned. So we don't care that you know, it works this way, and you can launch Solitaire, which mm-hmm. looks just as good as it did in Windows 3.1, faster than you could before.
Yeah.
We're looking for that usability, but the issue is someone who has a team of people working on a product,
mm-hmm.
like you've got a UI team and you've got a you know, the development team, and, you know, all these different people that are assembling the product. Mm-hmm. Not every programmer has that luxury.
Right.
So what is, if anything, what is the WIDBI beta providing for developers who aren't really experts in design?
Well, first off, we got to remember to address some of your previous concerns. WinHack is the Windows Hardware Engineering Conference, so it's not really for software developers. It's designed for equipment manufacturers and people who build motherboards and stuff like that. So it's a preview of what you're going to see in Longhorn from the technical side in terms of, how is my hardware going to interact with each other? How are printers going to discover themselves? You know, those kind of things. It's not even targeted at software developers. That's a the Professional Developers Conference. It's coming up in September. So what you're seeing right now is Microsoft has locked in features in terms of this is the hardware requirements. This is what you're going to need in terms of driver development and to make sure that when you plug something in, it just works. If you plug something in over your network, it just works. And making sure that these people who need a good year to 18 months lead time have that time to be able to be ready for it. So that addresses your first one. In terms of what you've seen with UI, everybody's disappointed. And
Well, I wouldn't say everybody. There have been a few professional publications that haven't exactly been truthful, I believe, in their reviews and have been somewhat misleading.
Well, it's Luna Plus.
Which isn't saying much.
No. It's not. I think you're going to see a change, and they say wait for Beta 2, and you've even expressed concerns that you're worried that Beta 2 is too late. Remember, there is going to be a release candidate, and there is going to actually be a, they call it RC0, which is, it's kind of weird. They don't do that too often. It's almost a waypoint in between a full-fledged, we've locked in features, we're just tuning, and hey, you know, this is where we're going, but we're still adding things. So there's going to be a public beta too towards the end of the year, and that's when they're going to check in a lot of the new user interface and things like that. But you're going to still see another release in between there where Microsoft starts locking things down. And you're going to see another, I think, if not one release candidate, two more release candidates after that that say, okay, this is what we're going with. This is locked down. We're running it in terms of stability, in terms of we're putting in tons of devices and making sure we don't get blue screens and that kind of thing. So there's been so much talk about Longhorn up to now that people are, you know, starting to get tired of hearing about it, and you're expecting that it's going to be done. Well, they're not even close in terms of the development cycle to delivering the experience that you're looking for. And I'm not going to apologize for Microsoft, but at the same time, you got to remember that I was on campus when Blaster hit. And when Blaster hit, Microsoft freaked out. They called all hands, and every single person was, they were rotating developers into the phone banks to answer questions, and it was a nightmare for people. And so after Microsoft recovered from that, which wasn't for a good solid week or two at least, if not the whole rest of the month, they sat back and said, oh my God, we can never let this happen again. So they took that time and pulled stuff out of Longhorn, stuff that they'd already been working on for a year or two, and pushed it back into XP Service Pack 2. And so that took an entire year off of the development process of Longhorn. So they showed the kimono in terms of PDC, and then they got sidetracked. Now, I'm not going to apologize for that, but at the same time, you do have to take that in consideration when you consider the schedule and the development process and where we're at right now. So in terms of where we're at with WIDBI, WIDBI is the tool set that, or at least the tool set where you can begin to develop solutions towards looking towards Longhorn. Microsoft is probably going to put out a release after that that's targeted specifically to Longhorn, called Orcus, but it's probably going to be more of a point release, minor enhancements to include Longhorn and Office development for Office 12, which is due out sometime in the middle of 2006. But WIDBI is a significant improvement in terms of performance, in terms of being able to really push the limit of what you can do with the Windows, the Win32 programming interface. They've done a lot of work because .NET 2.0 WIDBI is integrated with SQL Server. They've done a ton of work to make sure that it's really, really, really solid in performance. SQL Server has installations all over the place that have to be up 100% of the time, and or as close to 100% as possible. And so you cannot have a framework of any kind in there running alongside SQL that's going to take SQL down. And in many cases, having the .NET framework in SQL Server has actually improved performance because of that. So You're going to start to see richer experiences with programming. You're seeing the groundwork laid for interacting with WinFS, which will be delivered at some point, probably in 2007. You're seeing new ways of rendering the desktop. And a lot of people are going to say, oh, great, you know, OS X has been able to do that for forever. Well, OS X doesn't have the install base. The general user experience is with Windows every day for most people when you go into the office or whatever. And so there's a lot of things coming that are going to be able to, yeah, sure, it makes it easier for developers to code, but you got to remember, what's a developer's main purpose? Developer's main purpose is to make a computer program that is easy to interact with, that does its job with the least amount of hassles. And
well, then a lot of them fail.
Right, and I will agree with you there. But you got to remember, too, our industry is really young. Comparatively speaking, I mean, compared to cars or anything else, our industry is still really young. And I love geeks as much as the next guy, but geeks are not the best at being able to communicate what their intent is. And especially when those people are writing software. I mean, like I said, I'm a geek. I'm not the best communicator in the world, but I try not to develop user interfaces because I don't necessarily know what's the best way a person's going to interact with it. There are whole specialties in college now for, you know, natural human interaction and how are people going to interact with the next level of devices. And I'd just as soon leave that up to them. For the first time with Longhorn and some of the Longhorn-related technologies, you will be able to allow developers to do that. They've been able to do it with the web for forever, but not with Windows.
Well, but I don't know if that's a good example either, because there are a lot of people who can slap together a web page, and it's what it looks like. It was just slapped together.
Well, I definitely agree with you there. And writing software isn't for everybody. The problem that Microsoft has, and the reason that they're successful, and the reason that they're hated at the exact same time, is because they focus on the platform. They focused on making it something that other people can build businesses off of. And, you know, Apple has a really killer operating system in terms of look and feel, in terms of interacting with it. Their design stuff is always great. All their hardware is all designed by designers. All their software is designed by people who want to make things look good and to interact with them. Their stuff's used by designers. The problem with that is that's pretty much the only people who use them. Macs are great for that kind of interaction, but they don't have anywhere near the install base. So one of the things I talked to, I believe Greg Sullivan, who's the head of the Longhorn, he's product manager, product marketing manager, or something like that. I asked him today, I said, you know, why is it that OS X or Tiger or whatever can come out with really great UI paradigms and take risks in changing those paradigms between releases? And his response to that was that Microsoft's focus is really, unfortunately for us power users, on the enterprise. And in the enterprise space, when you release a new paradigm for interacting with your computer, you have serious retraining issues, especially when you're talking about 40 and 50 year old secretaries who, you know, have been working with the same program for 10 years. So they have to take those things into consideration when they develop new UI. So they can't take as big a risk as Apple because Apple doesn't have as big of an install base. And the people that are using it appreciate really good design and would be willing to make changes to be able to interact with that design. Most people who interact with Windows don't want to interact with Windows. Not because they don't necessarily like computing, but that helps, but because they have other things in their job that they need to do. And to sit and have to learn a new UI every year or every 3 years doesn't make very good business sense. So it's tough. You have to balance that out. And I think that now that, yeah, okay, so you can write really poor web applications, and we've seen that. But that's the problem with building an open system. You're enabling the good and the bad. And you have to hope that the people working on the good outweigh the bad.
So you started Longhorn Blogs after hearing, or I guess reading, something that Robert Scoble had written on his blog. So you're nothing more than an enthusiast.
I'm definitely an enthusiast. I'm extremely enthusiastic about most of the things that Microsoft does. I love Windows. I work with Windows every day. And I'm excited for what we're going to see next. I mean, growing up, I'm, you know, riding the tail end of the second generation of computing. And I was really upset, like in high school, that I couldn't be involved in the dot-com boom or whatever. I look at where we're at now, and I see this being an even more exciting time from that. And I love being able to talk about that.
Wait, how old are you?
23 as of April 21st.
You're just a youngin'.
Yeah, what can I say?
Just a youngin'.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Even my youngest brother's older than you.
Wow. My youngest sister's still in high school.
Oh, so. Boy. Jeez. Yeah, see what you look back and lament, you know, there are things that, you know, we didn't have. Mm-hmm. We didn't necessarily have the luxury of the internet at all in high school.
Hey, when I was your age.
Pretty much. And, you know, you said we're a young industry.
Yeah.
So you started Longhorn Blogs after reading something.
Scoble was sitting on his weblog, pontificating as he always does on, oh man, I wish I had a place where I could talk just about Longhorn. And having been Scobalized a couple times and love talking to the guy, I gave it about a week, 4 days to a week, something like that. All right, somebody else had to pick up on that, and somebody else is going to set up a site. After about a week, nothing happened, and so I said, all right, I got to do the site. And so I pulled in a few favors from some friends and had a guy put together a website for me, and we used the .txt blogging engine, which is a blogging engine designed specifically for the .NET framework, and slapped up a website, and it took off. That was probably a month before PDC in 2003, and within that time, we were actually featured on one of Jim Alchin's slides at the PDC keynote, and that was really cool. PDC was a really tough day for me that first day, because it was the fires in LA, and they closed down a bunch of airports and canceled a bunch of flights. So I left from Phoenix at 1 in the morning on a Greyhound and drove all night, couldn't sleep at all, walked into the keynote with my massive suitcase because I didn't know how to pack for these stupid events, and I'm sitting next to Robert Scoble with my suitcase and all my crap, having just gotten off the bus, and Jim Alchin says, and make sure you check out longhornblogs.com, and showed a big screenshot of our site on his slide, and I about jumped in the air and screamed. It was really cool.
Yeah, so that's been going on for about a year now?
Or? It's actually been almost 3 years, actually.
Wow, okay.
It's been quite a while, so.
Wait, Longhorn Blogs, 3 years? Microsoft's been talking about it for that long?
Let me think.
No.
We launched, no, it's got to be, it's a little over two.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure when we started.
They've been talking about it for so long. This is why the industry's going, okay. It's never going to happen.
It's been a while. Remember, there was a year in between Service Pack 2 development. Slammer hit in, PDC was in, I want to say October. Slammer hit in August. PDC was in October, and they showed off what they had already done. And then in between there, nothing happened. There were, the PDC build was build 4074. No, the PDC build was 4051.
Yeah, and that was the one that had the sidebar still.
Yeah.
The desktop sidebar.
There were 30 builds in between that and WinHack the following year, and there were almost no builds after that for a long time.
Yeah. So
there were still
died.
Internal teams working on things, but most of the Windows core team was working on delivering Service Pack 2.
because of the issues that they needed to get resolved almost immediately.
Yeah.
Well, that does put things in perspective, but it's still a little disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it's definitely severely disappointing.
It's 5 years between releases. I mean, we had Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows 2000, Windows Millennium Edition.
No, don't know. Windows Millennium Edition never gets mentioned on the show.
Oh, my bad.
That is not it's not an operating system. It's like Highlander 3. It's been stricken from canon. Which I'm just about ready to do with Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones.
I do have to say, I'm probably going to get some hate mail from this. I never had a problem with Windows Millennium Edition.
But did you buy it out of the box, like on a box, pre-installed on a machine?
No, I bought it over the counter.
Oh my god. Oh my god. And you didn't
I hate
have
to say this.
Oh my god.
I'm probably the only person that did this.
Oh
it's
god.
One of the only operating systems that I've ever bought.
You know, Windows Millennium Edition, I installed it, and I had it installed for 2 hours, and that's as long as it took. I mean, I had, like, 3 blue screens within that time, and I'm like, I'm going back to Windows 98. And then I thought, I'm like, maybe I should try Windows 2000, and I tried 2000, I couldn't turn back. I mean, once I was on 2000.
Did you install over the top of Windows 98, or did
no,
you start
No, I did
cleaning?
It fresh.
You
I did
it fresh, really?
And it was just, it was the worst, experience. In fact, when Ponzi and I first met over the internet, she Googled my name, and one of the things that she read about was me basically saying that, you know, don't use Windows Millennium Edition, and that's the operating system she was using. But lo and behold, she was having like tons of problems with her scanners and peripherals, and and that's, you know, things were crashing.
Young tech love.
So I had to. This was one of the first things I did, was wipe the drive and put XP on it.
Yeah,
it made her computer pretty happy too. Mm. I mean, anytime you go from a Windows Millennium Edition to a XP, it'd be happier. And largely because, you know, a lot of the 16-bit legacy code that was still replete throughout the Millennium Edition code, or I guess operating system. And you know, this experience is kind of talked about this week at WinHack, how moving from 16-bit from 32-bit was far and away, you know, a different situation than it is today, where we're faced with having to move from 32-bit to 64-bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you had much experience with the 64-bit world yet?
No, not yet.
Is that something that we really have to start worrying about?
I mean,
in terms of what program should we get? I mean, it was clear. You know, you always get the 32-bit program over the 16-bit, but is there a reason to get, you know, assuming you have a 64-bit operating system on a 64-bit processor, 64-bit optimized system, is there a real reason for consumers to get a 64-bit program over a 32-bit program?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say the comparison's pretty similar to when you had 8-bit Nintendo versus 16-bit Nintendo versus 32-bit Nintendo versus 64. Or I think they skipped 32 and went to 64. At any rate, it's very similar. With 64-bit, you have more capabilities. They demoed a really great demo on 64-bit rendering. 3D rendering with, I think it was Lightwave, and how a render process that would normally take 3 months and several thousand passes, you could complete in a week. You have more memory space. You have a bigger pipe. You have more information that can be processed.
So wait, when they say you have more memory space, does that mean, when I hear that, I think a couple things. One, that means I'm going to have to buy a lot of RAM. And two, does that mean that the virtual disk or the virtual RAM is going to kind of go away?
Well, your virtual RAM definitely could go away. And I mean, but off of that note, they came out or they demoed a Hitachi drive, I believe, that used a gigabyte data buffer so that you didn't have to write to the hard drive as much. And apparently that's going to be in notebooks coming out in 2006. You only have to write once, I think, once every 30 minutes. And so that's great for notebook hard drives because they die so quickly. In terms of virtual RAM, if you have more space, it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to need more RAM. You're going to want more RAM, but the upper limit of RAM that you can get is much higher. So I think the limit right now is 4 gigabytes. And, you know, if you're doing high-level processing, if you're in any kind of server environment, that's a really low limit for being able to deal with lots of users or serving up lots of web pages or handling a lot of transactions. So with 64-bit, not only do you have... It's like having a bigger pipeline to flow water through. You have a bigger channel. You have more ability to process information and the ability... Or the information can be processed faster, and you're working it done quicker. You're not necessarily going to see an improvement when you're using Word, but if you're gaming or if you're doing any kind of software development or anything that requires a lot of processor, you're going to see it operate a lot faster and have everything else be able to operate along with it a lot faster.
And is that going to eventually hit the desktop market in such a way that would... See, it's so hard to phrase this question because I remember what it was like moving from 16 to 32. Mm-hmm. It was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And now it almost seems like there is no real performance decrease running a 32-bit program on a 64-bit processor from everything that I've seen.
There's no performance decrease across the system, and what they've done with Windows X64, it's basically what they did on... Windows 3.1 when they ran Win32s on there, but it's backwards. So they call it WoW 64 or Windows on Windows 64. You can run 32-bit processes on a 64-bit processor, but you can't talk to a 64-bit process from a 32-bit process. They have to keep them separated out. So in terms of... Is it going to be something that you're going to see on the desktop? Yeah, it's going to be a forced thing at some point. It's like the digital TV broadcasting. At some point, they're going to stop doing analog and move to digital. If you have a 32-bit system, will it still work? Yeah. If you have an analog TV, is your TV going to stop working? Yeah. So, but in terms of having it be important on the desktop, I think it's already important in terms of... You see more devices talking to each other. You see people doing more things with their computers. You see, you want to enable that really great experience and stop dealing with terrible programs. You're going to need a 64-bit processor that's going to be able to help move data between your memory and your graphics processor and your hard drive to be able to make sure that your experience is not only seamless, but that it's not slow at some points or that it doesn't freeze because you're trying to do 8 things at once.
I'd be interested to see if anybody's done a comparison with, you know, a full 64-bit system versus a 32-bit system.
You missed the keynote.
I did see the video. I downloaded it from NeoWin, and I don't know if it's still available there right now, but I did download and watch that on using SQL Server 2005 and watching it, you know, spike on the 32-bit platform versus the 64-bit platform. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, that's in a server environment, and I understand clearly the advantages in a server environment. Mm-hmm. You know, my question is more on just the average use from a desktop or a workstation model. So seeing the advantages of 64-bit, I mean, beyond the optimized programs that have been optimized for, you know, either multi-threading or 64-bit, you know, in a 64-bit environment, just general usage.
Well, it depends on what you mean by general usage. If you're talking a knowledge worker using Office and Excel and PowerPoint and, you know, Outlook, you're probably not going to see that big of a difference. I mean, if all you do is surf the web and check your email, it's not going to be any different than what you're doing today. But it's you know, what are – those people aren't pushing their hardware to its limits. You're talking about more the intermediate range, the power users, and then like developers and specialized stuff where that's really going to be important. But at the end of the day, you can't support both technologies. And one technology reaches its limit, and you have to move on to the next one. And so within the next, I'd say, 2 years, 32-bit won't be around anymore.
And a bigger question to be asking, and I don't know if Microsoft's even figured this out yet, but is a Longhorn machine only going to be 64-bit?
No. Longhorn Machine will be 32-bit and 64-bit. What they want to do is enable it so where when you buy Longhorn, you can choose to install one version or the other version. It will come with both versions so that you don't have to worry about getting the box that's blue instead of green or
so
whatever.
Wait, so does that mean they're going to forego the whole stupid home versus pro thing?
I doubt it.
I've heard
colossally stupid.
I've heard rumblings that they will still have the home and pro names, but the way they stack it and the feature set will be smarter. And I've also heard that they're going to do away with it entirely. But one of the really cool things about Longhorn is, and the things that you can see right now, is that it's the install experience is going to be head and shoulders better than any install experience you've had before.
In what ways?
Well, they have this concept called the, I believe it's the WinPE, the Windows Pre-Execution Environment. And basically, instead of copying files to the hard drive and then manipulating them and running setup and all that, there's a basic Windows image that is copied from the CD or the DVD to the hard drive, which will run the most bare-bones possible Windows you can imagine. From there, you can choose to configure your options, and from one CD environment, you can have multiple components. The Media Center editions and the tablet PC editions that you have now will be highly componentized and dropped into the same build, so that, and possibly even the same CD, so that those are just really simple add-on components instead of having their tendrils across, you know, all sorts of different files and needing separate service packs or whatever. So the installation experience there is going to be a lot faster because you don't have to worry about your read-write from the CD in terms of copying lots of files over and the fact that the CD isn't optimized to make sure that it's reading all at once and then writing all at once at the same time. You're just going to have an image that gets copied over and run. In terms of if you're a network administrator, that experience is going to be tons better because you can configure which components get installed, and you can have that image deployed across your network much more efficiently than what happens with that experience right now in Windows Server 2003. So you're going to see a lot of things change in terms of how am I getting information to Windows. I know the install experience right now, it asks you a lot more questions right up front so that you can walk away, and that it does a slightly better job of estimating how much time it's going to take. Because, you know, on Windows right now it says it's going to be 23 minutes, and an hour and a half later it's done. So not only are you going to decrease that time, but you'll be able to, you know, get up and do your thing, and when you come back, you'll actually be finished versus, oh yeah, now I have to install my, or set my key and activate and configure what my network settings are going to be and all that. So, I don't remember how we got to that question, but.
No, I mean, and I do, I want to specifically ask a lot of Longhorn questions mm-hmm. since you're probably more knowledgeable than the people who are working on Longhorn being an advocate. No, I say that with all seriousness. I mean, there you collect information mm-hmm. Because you're an enthusiast, and people who tend to be inside a certain box mm-hmm. don't see all those things. Mm-hmm. You know, I see that happen time and time again. You know, when I bring up just in my opinion, just a glaring oversight mm-hmm. That I see plain as day that right. no one had even, you know, oh yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, it's that echo chamber effect.
Very much so.
You get people in the same, you know, scenarios. They're not necessarily looking at how are you going to do it here. I mean, we haven't even touched on some of the big news on Longhorn blogs today, but I ran into that same scenario with Google earlier last year. So that echo chamber, it happens all over the place, and it definitely happens inside Microsoft.
So the setup process has been refined. Mm-hmm. What about, and let's say, again, we're talking, hypothetically speaking, let's say I've got a build of Longhorn that's finished. It's gold. Mm-hmm. This is what's shipping. Mm-hmm. Am I going to get the same speed out of my current computer, same hardware, and let's say it's perfect for Longhorn. So what is it? I've got it's an Intel 3 gigahertz processor, a gigabyte of RAM, you know, I think a 7200 RPM hard drive. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty average at this point. Actually, it's probably below average. Mm-hmm. throwing Longhorn on there, am I going to see any speed differences? Theoretically, again.
Well, I mean, looking at older builds, it was pretty slow, especially when you had a database in the file system. It was really slow. Your speed, I don't think, is going to decrease much, if at all. I think a lot of the work they're doing is actually trying to improve the speed of the way a lot of things get done. And you have to remember, too, that a lot of the things that happen right now in terms of rendering your desktop happen in software, in memory. And so that's one of the reasons why for a lot of people their experience is slow. You get white windows because the rendering engine hasn't redrawn it yet. Excuse me, whatever. With Longhorn, they're actually moving all of that onto the graphics processor. If your computer has the capabilities, and any new computer I'd say that was bought within the last year should be able to support a level of the Longhorn experience. We haven't touched on the fact that there are three different levels of Longhorn experience in terms of how your graphics processor displays Windows to you. But at the basic level, it's going to be what Windows XP is now. At the intermediate level, it's going to include some new features in terms of hardware rendering, but it's assuming your graphics card isn't good enough to be able to support the full 3D. And then the top level, they're calling it right now Aero Glass, and that's going to be a full hardware-rendered DirectX-managed environment for rendering your desktop in three dimensions. And I'm not talking about having, you know, icons that are really small and far back on your screen three dimensions. I'm talking being able to manage how windows pop up and pop down and have the demo that they showed a long time ago was three copies of the Episode 2 trailer running at the exact same time with no dropped frames and spinning on the desktop. So it actually flipped around or whatever. So if you've bought anything within the last year, you're going to have a great Longhorn experience. If you are expecting to have a great Longhorn experience on your, you know, five-year-old computer, your expectations are too high. But you'll still be able to install Longhorn and use Longhorn. It's just going to be slow. It's not going to be that great because you're not able to take advantage of the capabilities that will exist if you're using newer hardware. Now, most people are going to get Longhorn off of a new machine anyways. Mm-hmm. So even if they make their ship date of next summer, they're not anticipating wide availability until the fall. And why is that? Because the fall is the holiday buying season.
Yeah.
So hopefully by then people will stop buying new computers because spyware's taken over their old one. But you never know.
So it sounds like, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But I've heard so much about how Longhorn was going to be all this and all that. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every time you turn around, they rip something else out of it. So, for instance, you mentioned WinFS is, mm-hmm. is being now in the 2007 time frame. Mm-hmm. You know, what else can we really expect to see in Longhorn?
Mm-hmm. Well, Microsoft screwed up the message really bad. And Robert Scoble let me in on what was going on a couple hours before the announcement was made. And my first reaction was, that's handling it very badly. And we saw it happen, and there wasn't anything that any of us could do about it. I mean, as a blogger, I tried to help clarify the message. I had two or three posts on Longhorn blogs that went really specific into dependencies and how Longhorn was dependent on WIDMI, .NET 2.0, and Yukon, which is SQL Server 2005. It was dependent on SQL Server 2005 for WinFS because the database was in the file system. So you have, some of you are going to be familiar with NTFS, which is the rich metadata file system that lets you, you know, have virtual folders and tag your files and whatnot. And then you're going to have a database schema on top of that where you could relate files in ways that you could do on databases in terms of having a file be in multiple folders. When that announcement was made that WinFS was gone, people assumed that all that functionality in terms of having multiple virtual folders and having a file exist in more than one location were going to be gone. And it's really funny because the execs say, oh, we tried to say that, but nobody listened. Well, they didn't say it very well because all anybody focused on was when FS is gone and we're moving Avalon to Avalon and Indigo to Windows XP.
And what are Avalon and Indigo?
Avalon is the new graphics processing system. So that 3D stuff that I was telling you about earlier is all based in Avalon, which is the new desktop renderer. And
is that going to be eliminating GDI all across the board?
No, it uses, if I'm not mistaken, it uses GDI, but it uses a new, it's called the LDDM, the Longhorn Display Driver model, which is the successor to GDI and will allow you to do a heck of a lot more with your graphics power than you can right now.
But for instance, I know that Avalon is they're bringing it to XP.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to actually see some display, desktop differences when that rolls out?
No. Avalon on Windows XP is to enable a better rollout experience so you can have that install base. If you have Avalon on XP, you're able to better deal with, to have those programming changes that I told you about earlier in terms of having designers work on the front end and having developers work on the back end. And not the back end like the database code, but the back end of how, when you click a button, how does that actually get handled inside your code? To be able to enable that on a wide install base, it was foolish to expect that that was going to happen with Longhorn in 2006 or even 2007. So to get the experience they wanted, they had to backport it. Now, I've heard some people say that the plan was always to backport it. I'm not certain on that. But with Avalon, it is designed on XP to run using GDI. And so it's going to interact with Windows. It's going to interact with it in the way that Windows XP knows and understands.
Yeah.
But when you install, Avalon will be built into Longhorn. And when you use Avalon on Longhorn, it's going to use the new driver model that's able to make better use of the graphics.
So GDI is still going to be there, but it's going to be a lot less.
Microsoft
there
is the backwards compatibility king. And so anything
that they've... But why still do things in GDI?
Because you have hundreds of thousands of programs that interact with GDI in one way or another.
But wait, why not create a layer for it?
Mm. Well, they have. They have two different systems that exist side by side. And so if you use a program that interacts with GDI, you're not going to see any kind of different experience in terms of, seeing the program work vastly different or look vastly different. But when you use something that was based in Avalon, and basically I've talked about what Avalon is in terms of displaying, but Avalon is really a declarative markup engine that allows you to use an XML-like syntax to define what your interface looks like. And so instead of having all this Visual Basic code or C# or C++ code that says the button goes here or whatever, they've built from the ground up a brand new display model that lets you use managed code in the .NET framework to specify how your interface is going to look in three dimensions.
Now, wait a minute. Does that mean that the user can control the user interface?
They could. The potential is there. Whether or not that will actually happen is another story, and I don't think it will actually happen in many cases. But in some cases, I think there's a really great story for being able to wrap up your UI and let you, for simpler utilities, let you be able to change how it looks and how you interact with it. It also enables some really interesting experiences when you serve up what's called a XAML, or it's a XAML. I don't remember what the acronym is. It's a Extensible Application Markup Language or something like that. When you serve up a XAML document over a web server and you browse in an Internet Explorer, you get an experience that looks like a regular Windows application. It doesn't show up in a browser, but you browsed to it. and you interacted with it from across the internet. So it really is a different paradigm in terms of how are you going to interact with programs in a world where it doesn't matter what computer you're on, where a whole bunch of computers talk to each other and resources can be all over the place.
Yeah, except when the internet is down.
Right. But then that's where .NET 2.0 and a technology called Click Once comes into play. And Click Once is a new installation paradigm for applications that allows you to define how an application gets installed. You can browse to it from the web and install it onto your machine locally. And every time you're connected to the internet, it will check for updates. When it finds a new update, it'll ask you to download it, and it'll run silently, the install silently without you needing to interact with it, unless you absolutely have to. So you can make sure that whatever program you're using is always current and available. Now, like, Windows has that built in through Windows Update, and like Adobe does it, and a couple other programs do it, but this is the first way that developers don't have to build that themselves. It's already built into .NET 2.0, and so you can enable that. Again, .NET tries to solve problems for people so that people can focus on other problems. So, you'll be able to see that if you're not connected, you can still interact with it because it's installed locally on your machine.
So they're bringing some of these things from, you know, the Longhorn experience back to Windows XP to make it an easier, I guess you can consider it almost an upgrade path.
Right.
You know, to be able to use Avalon-enabled. And what was the other thing that you said?
Indigo.
Indigo
is basically the communication soup all rolled into one.
What do you mean?
There's web services. You have a technology called remoting that lets you pass information between an application domain. There's COM. There's COM Plus. There's a ton of different ways that programs can talk to each other. Indigo is a single unified model that lets applications interact with each other across processes in one computer, across processes on separate computers, across the internet, across anything. It's secure, it uses transactions, and it has a model that has been well thought out and has been, from the day of its inception, designed to work on both Windows XP, Windows Server 2003, and Longhorn.
Now, what does that really mean? I mean, what kind of applications can we expect? A lot of P2P stuff?
It helps with the P2P in terms of being able to communicate across a router or across a firewall. It helps deal with presence information, and so with Indigo you can determine, you know, who's next to you or what programs are set up or what devices are around you. It's all the WYSI, it's the web services enhancements for Visual Studio. It's like web services security. It's all the WS specs rolled into one, but beyond what Microsoft has delivered thus far. So you're going to see a lot of really interesting applications start to show up once Indigo is out there. I mean, think of Trillion on steroids.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm thinking of, and I use Trillion largely because I think the IM industry is full of egos, and it's getting to the point where media players are almost just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah. Well, speaking of IM clients, did you hear AOL is going to be dropping AIM for some kind of new Triton client or something like that?
Well, I don't know if they're dropping the service. I think they're just dropping the client.
Right. I'm sure they'll still use the protocol.
Yes, and that's something that's been needed for quite some time. But that's still not going to keep me, or that's not going to make me install AOL. I mean, even to take a look at it, screenshots do a wonderful job at translating that experience. But until the IM industry gets their act together, I'm still sticking with Trillion, which I'm actually with the older, the 2.x, because I think the 3.0, I don't like any of the new skins, and I'm waiting for them.
My 2.0 skins still work great on 3.0.
Well, the microscopic skin that I use on 2.0 doesn't work very well with 3.
I see.
I'm waiting for the developer to update a new, or to provide a new update.
You're
going to
kill your eyes with those little tiny programs.
Oh, sure. Whatever. No, I'm not. It works. It's been working fine for at least 2 years now. So we can expect some of these things to come back to Windows XP to help the experience. Mm-hmm. what else can we expect to see? I mean, we know what we're not going to see with Longhorn, but you know how much are you privy to in terms of new features, new functionality within the next Windows operating system?
That's a sore subject for me at the moment, actually.
Wait, what do you mean sore subject? Mr. Longhorn blogs himself, sore subject.
I'm sore. I get hardly any love from the Windows team in terms of information. In some cases, I hear about it after it's on news.com.
Yeah.
So, fortunately, apparently it's been on Microsoft's radar, and as soon as Longhorn is in beta, I will be privy to more information. And so, Windows is a lot more secretive of a team. Windows is Microsoft's golden child. They have to take care of it, and they, for industry reasons, tend to stay pretty secretive about it. You're not going to see that at all on the Windows developer or on the developer side of things. They're extremely open. They have an entirely different set of community, and they are extremely transparent.
Why is that? I mean, just because they can afford to do that? Or...
Because Microsoft is a huge organization, and paradigms like blogging and stuff like that take time to trickle through. And on the Windows team, they regard the Windows secrets a lot more highly than the developer stuff. So you're not going to see a whole lot of transparency. Now, I'm not giving people like Don Box and Chris Anderson their due, and there's a lot of people who do develop on Windows, who develop Windows, who have their own blogs. But in terms of a mass PR shift for getting the evangelists and the community leaders that kind of information, they're still lagging behind other divisions.
And that falls back onto my whole belief that the user is completely eliminated from the equation.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in the equation. It's developers, it's platform, and that's it.
Right.
And, you know, quite honestly, and the power users get the table scraps. And I lump MVPs, power users, evangelists, I lump them all into the same category because ultimately they're passionate about something.
Right.
You know, they want something to be a great experience and they want to share that energy with other people. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft has done very little. I mean, I've seen it in small places, bits and pieces. They've done very little to empower the enthusiast.
And, at least on the Windows side.
Well, no, and it's not just the Windows side, understand. There have been, like I said, bits and pieces. Beth Goza, I believe, was one of the first people to institute the Mobius program, which is for mobile enthusiasts, not just Windows mobile enthusiasts, but just mobile enthusiasts in general. I believe one of the first ones, I think it was the second one, a couple years ago on campus, which was my first time in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also experienced it within MSN Search Champs, now doing that twice. And then I've did it with the Feature Community Summit with Jed Rose and Josh. Ooh, he's going to strangle me. I can see his face, too, because we just had dinner with him.
You just had dinner with him? Oh, man.
Josh. God. Just don't tell him we did this program and we'll be fine.
Okay.
I'm probably going to remember it as soon as we keep talking. It's going to come to me. You know, in bits and pieces, it's come together where they'll try to get things going, but the problem is that marketing becomes involved.
Right.
And once marketing becomes involved, forget about getting anything useful out of it.
I love – Wagner Edstrom has treated me very well over the past couple of weeks. The marketing and Windows, there are two separate teams with any product. There's the Windows there's the product development team, and there's the product marketing team. And when I think of this, I kind of think of the whole Office Space thing where the guy's like, I take the specifications to the developers because the developers can't deal with people. Well, that's what the marketing team does. Their job is to listen to feedback and to take that to the developers and help the developers create specs and create the result. The problem with that is up to now, Microsoft's been doing that with focus groups, with users, and that doesn't work.
You're telling me.
And so you've seen again, Microsoft is a very large organization, and Microsoft is seeing a huge response in the developer community on having lots of people interact with them, and lots of, almost, in ASP.NET's example, almost all the ASP.NET product team blogs and interacts with customers in forums and with the MVPs and whatever. That doesn't happen on the Windows side yet, and they're starting to see that. And I think one of the biggest changes that I've seen, Microsoft announced they were going to do interim builds between Beta 1 and Beta 2, and probably between Beta 2 and the release candidates. They're called Community Technology Previews, and they are CTPs. And those allow you to see where Microsoft's at without having to be at the same quality level as a beta. And that's big. I mean, shoot. I run one of the top 100 websites of 2004, or so PC Magazine says. I haven't seen a build since the last WinHack. There have been people lobbying for, you know, virtual PC builds that are downloadable, which you can get as an MVP in the developer side. There's been people lobbying for a lot of things, but it takes more time on the Windows side for whatever reason, and it's moving a lot more slowly, and it's disappointing. It really is, because Microsoft has yet to fully realize how devoted some of their enthusiasts are and how much they want Microsoft to succeed. And it doesn't always happen. In fact, and on the Windows end user side, it rarely happens. On the developer side, it's great, because I know several features that I specifically said I need changed. These are terrible, and you need to fix it. I filed them on MSDN Ladybug, and which is their product feedback site, and within hours I got a response from the person in charge of that bug, or the person in charge of that product and that group, saying, here's what we're going to fix, or here's what we're not going to fix, and here's why. You don't see that on the Windows side. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see it in Longhorn. I'm pretty sure that you're not going to see that level of interaction in the Longhorn development process. Now, I could be wrong, and I really hope that I am, but you're probably not going to see that fully take hold on the Windows side until Blackcomb and beyond.
So wait, so is it Longhorn then Blackcomb?
Longhorn then Blackcomb.
I remember the first time I heard about Blackcomb, it was that was even longer before I heard about Longhorn.
That was supposed to be released in 2007.
So
Longhorn was supposed to be released for Microsoft's 20th anniversary of Windows.
Ooh. So they missed that by
2005.
Yeah, they missed that by a year.
They've missed it. I mean, that's happening now. So that was the original idea, that it was going to be the celebration of 20 years of Windows.
So why not? I mean, why doesn't Microsoft make a bold move and maybe release some new things for Windows XP, just some shell enhancements, just to give us a feel like, you know, like a refresher. And the Plus Pack, quite honestly, turned into crap.
Well, if you're a tablet user, you've already seen that with
the expansion pack. Is
no,
that
not the expansion. Well, there was a new theme that they put on with the Service Pack 2 Royale that changed the experience little bit.
The media, is that the same one that's on Media Center?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty nice. It's a little hard to read in some places.
Yeah, but I hate Luna altogether. So
right.
why not just give something to hold us over?
Why?
You know?
You have what's Microsoft's business case for that? I mean, yeah, there are definite mindshare cases, but when you have X Windows, where you have Stardock, when you have so many other companies that build that, why? Why would you do that versus and devote development time to not only building a product, but building documentation, building installers, releasing it, writing EULAs, and all that other stuff? Why would you make developers do that when they could be working on the next version? From a business standpoint.
I'm probably still going to be running classic mode anyway.
You probably are.
You know, I hate saying it as much. I really want to use something different.
I'm going to give you a Windows 95 machine for your birthday.
No, you're not. I remember Windows 95, and I actually debated installing it as a virtual PC machine.
Yeah.
Just to remember what it was like to not have Internet Explorer as a default icon on the desktop. Guy, oh jeez, those were nightmarish days. I know. I still remember having to use Trumpet Windsock to dial.
Trumpet windsock.
Back
oh,
in, that was
geez.
A Windows 3.1 thing.
That was a Netscape 4.0
yeah,
thing.
No,
wasn't
it wasn't even, no, it wasn't even 4.0. Oh, it was way before. It was like 2.
Oh, geez.
It was like even before 2.
Yeah.
No, you had to use that as a stack because it didn't come with the, or it didn't come with,
and decent
anything.
Network.
Yeah, it didn't come with
in.
Anything.
Yeah.
And of course you could use, you know, slip, slurp, PPP, you know, all the basic protocols that
right.
some people still use to this day.
Yeah.
Which boggles my mind. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand why.
I'm with you. I'm the latest and greatest guy. Hey, I sat down with Chris Anderson at PDC and all these other people and said, "Look, you guys just acquired virtual PC. You just acquired a virtualization technology that you can build right into the desktop. Why not rip out all that legacy code?
Oh, yeah.
Run only 32-bit or only 64-bit code and take all that other stuff out and move it to a virtualization level." And they said, it's a time issue.
So wait, so it's a time issue. Why don't they start working on it now so that by the time Black Code rolls around...
Because they'll be done in, like, 2014. There's so much... The Windows code base is huge, and there's so much legacy code that's built on top of other code, or that other code
okay,
is
so
built on top
wait,
of.
Wait, isn't that where NT kind of started, was just a fresh approach to everything? It started that way, you know? And that's where we are. Mm-hmm. So now we're on NT. What Longhorn's going to be... 5.3?
Longhorn's going to be 6.0.
Oh, come on.
Longhorn's
how can it be,
be
how can it be that dramatically different? Because everything I've seen has not been...
Well,
I understand. Okay, going from Windows 3.x to 95, that was a leap. That
right.
was a tremendous leap. I'm sorry. Everything I see, you know, and hear about Longhorn, maybe just haven't explained enough about what it's really going to do.
Well, everything you've seen thus far is specifically towards developers. I mean, because they're the ones when Microsoft launches a
product. But they're not launching. Okay, look. If it was WinFS, if it was launching with WinFS, then I could see a 6.0.
Well, see, the one thing I didn't talk about was that when they ripped out WinFS, a lot of people thought that that meant that you couldn't do some cool things with search. And that's not true. You can do search now. I mean, what's the one you use?
I use Copernic at this
point. Copernic. There's MSN and Google
have
them. You can do search, really great desktop search, without having to have that built in.
Certainly.
I mean, you've seen what MSN has done, and that's pretty close to what you're going to see in Longhorn in
Which
terms
I'm,
of...
I'm sad. I mean, I don't think they got it right. In so many ways, they didn't get it right.
Yeah. Well,
at least in terms of what I've seen,
mm-hmm.
they just the only thing I've seen that has some amount of promise came from Microsoft Research, something called Tesla,
mm-hmm.
which was it's nothing more than kind of a proof of concept type of scenario,
right.
which reminded me a lot of what they were demonstrating with Longhorn. But
mm-hmm.
this guy had developed like an application that runs right now. It's a very rudimentary desktop search app.
I know it's really easy to get upset about what you've seen with Longhorn thus far, and
well,
I'd
no,
like
no,
to
but
hope
no, that's justifiable. That being upset is not complaining; it's justifiable.
Mm-hmm.
In my concerns are echoed
right.
throughout the voices of other power
right.
users who I've been watching.
I'll be the first one to tell you that what I've seen looks like Luna with transparency, but I don't think that's what you're going to end up seeing. You've got Hillel Cooperman, who is in charge of the experience, in charge of designing the Aero experience.
And what does this mean to me?
He's been working on, we've heard about it since last PDC and the last WinHack, that they're working on a user experience that will be different and that you will see an improvement. You're not going to see that till beta 2. And the word I keep hearing is, and let me tell you, for a long time, a lot of the Windows client team was disappointed. They did a lot of work on Longhorn, and when they had to take out WinFS, they had to rip a lot of stuff out. And so, I mean, like we heard today, the sidebar's gone.
Will that be... Okay, here's my question. They had to rip it out. I'm assuming they saved that code. Is that going to be reintroduced? Let's
You'll
say,
see it later
when, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. When like WinFS is ultimately released in
right.
2007,
yeah.
This is a big table. This is a lot of wood to knock on here.
Yeah.
When it's released in 2007, are you going to see not just a rollout of WinFS, but also like almost a refresh of what is, let's say, Windows Longhorn?
I can't answer that right now. If I were the Windows team, yeah. that I would see. What I see right now, reading the tea leaves, is that WinFS is going to be rolled into a Longhorn service pack, and that it'll be a separate install, but at the same time, there's going to be features in the shell around WinFS that will be added in as a service pack.
Yeah.
Almost a feature pack, so to speak. That's, if I were Microsoft, that's what I would do.
Well, and in my opinion, those service packs, quite honestly, should have something of value. And in every service pack, every update has been relatively lackluster, in my humble opinion. Now, and let's look beyond the obvious things like the Security Center, which you know is a good start. I'm talking about things, and I've been using this example several times over the past few days, specifically at WinHack, a program called XPIs, XPIZE.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This guy went out, replaced a lot of the craptacular images, pictures, AVIs, bitmaps, cursors, icons throughout Windows XP. All the icons that the shell team just completely ignored. I mean, it's blatantly obvious they were just completely ignored. He went through and patched the binaries to update the icons. That's all he did. That's all he touched was the icons and the and it actually makes XP a much more fulfilling experience. So you know, why not throw just a little bit of polish into a Service Pack 1, a Service Pack 2.
You got to remember, up until Windows XP Service Pack 2, service packs were just that. They were not feature enhancements in any way.
Yeah, but they never roll out security rollups. But they never roll out feature enhancements. Never. Microsoft never rolls out feature enhancements.
No, they did. They do with the Windows 2003 feature packs, which are going to be rolled into Windows Server 2003 R2. Which is, it's not a robot. Droid.
Right. No. What feature packs are you talking about specifically?
Like the, offhand, I know they're putting in, Active Directory. You're familiar with Active Directory. They broke Active Directory into something that you can install on an application level. So instead of having to deploy this massive Active Directory mode across an enterprise, you can install a mini Active Directory on a desktop so that program can interact with it and use it as an information store. That's going to be rolled in there. There's some networking enhancements. I know they're working on a print management center that's going to be for servers that will be in there. There's an improved SharePoint that's going to be in there. There's a lot of things that they're doing in terms of network management, in terms of server management, that are going to be rolled into R2 beyond the feature enhancements that they did with Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1.
See, I've heard a few people actually state that this Windows Server 2003?
R2.
Well, it's not just R2, just 2003 is actually faster than Windows XP.
Oh, yeah, it is. Well, you got to figure, too.
Faster, in what ways? Application, shell, what?
Well, Windows Server has to be more robust. It has to be able to operate with fewer bottlenecks. And you have made it very clear that you hate Luna, and it slows the shell down.
Yeah.
Well, Windows Server uses a modified Luna that doesn't have as much visual panache. So, and most people run Windows Server 2003 in a headless environment anyway, so you don't need that display stuff running. But you have a lot more performance issues that you have to deal with in a server environment. You can't have anything blue screen. I mean, they really strive for, you know, 5.9s of availability. And you can't do that if anything's going to crash. Longhorn Server is going to be out 6 months after Longhorn Desktop. There's a reason for that, because there's 6 months further of performance improvements and bullet testing and running against applications to make sure that it's going to stay available.
Why wouldn't someone, the average user, then want to use that instead of XP?
Windows Server 2003?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the only reason I use Windows XP is a better Bluetooth stack. Windows Server 2003, I think Service Pack 1 has a Bluetooth stack, because I think there should be more Bluetooth management.
Oh, certainly. And the stacks I've seen have just been laughable.
Right. And so,
especially you want to talk about bad icons. Those have got some of the, not the Microsoft version, just the,
right.
What is the, is it ActiveCom?
Yeah, that one.
ActionTech.
That one's terrible.
Oh, God. It's ghastly.
Yeah. And so I got a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard from the Microsoft store, and it wouldn't work in my Server 2003 box. So I had to – it was the worst – that was a sad day when I had to downgrade from 2003 to XP.
Just because of keyboard and mouse, I'd say dump the keyboard and mouse. Is the difference palpable? Because I mean, can you run games on Server 2003? Is it something
you can
that's so...
if you there are certain services that are disabled by default. You can run games if you open up certain services. Now Windows has that application compatibility mode, where in some cases you may have to make a program think it's running on XP instead of 2003. But you got to remember at the same time too, with Service Pack 2, Windows XP is a bit faster because it's just a little bit faster.
I don't detect it at all.
Because they recompiled all of the binaries using a new technology that was a new compiler that did bug checking better, that did Stack Overflow checking better, that went through and could do better optimizations.
How come I don't really see a difference then between non and...
I see a difference on clean machines. I don't see a difference on if you install Windows XP Service Pack 2, if it was a fresh install, it's a little bit, it's not that much slower. When I got Service Pack 2, I wiped my hard drive and went with an ISO that I got off of MSDN that had it built in.
Yeah.
And that one ran a bit faster. Of course, it's going to run faster when you clean off your machine. But then again, you've got stuff in your taskbar running all the time. You got Maxthon running with a million plugins. You've got stuff that's eating up a lot of memory. If you've got a gig of RAM, I'd say for the work you do, that's not enough. And at the same time, we're still dealing with, you know, not a huge write cache. You're still dealing with virtual memory a whole lot. If you're running a gig of memory and RAM and you're not tapping it out, you're running virtual memory that you don't need. And so you're doing hard drive commits where you don't have to. There's still a whole lot of space, and there's a whole lot of room in that space to be able to improve your performance. And they've done that with Windows Server 2003 because as a server operating system, you're not expected to have to do as much for games. You're not expected to have audio running. You're not expected to be doing several different things. It's a price point. If you're not an MSDN subscriber,
right,
why would you pay $8.99 for a server?
Certainly. So what then, you know, is it basically Windows XP but faster? I mean, just for all intent and purpose, seriously.
The Windows code base, there's one code base.
Right.
And there's different forks and branches or whatever.
Right, and that's where it gets very confusing.
Right. Well, Windows XP was designed off of Windows NT. So when they went, that's how that evolution went. You had the 3.1 and the 95 and the NT platform parallel. They merged that with XP.
XP.
But then you still have the server and the home flavors. But it's still one code base that has extra code from other forks built in. Now, another thing that happened between WinHex and the last Windows XP service pack is that they moved the Longhorn development off of Windows XP and onto the Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1 code base. And so they wanted to take that server availability and the high level of performance and the high and bulletproof testing and all that stuff and move that onto the desktop platform. That's a huge change. It's one of the reasons why you don't see as much today as you did last year in terms of features on the Longhorn build. That's a huge change. They had to move everything off onto a different platform, and it's not as simple as taking the file and moving it to a new branch. You have to change the way some of your code's working. And so
wait, now, in terms of speed difference, is this speed across the board? The difference between Server 2003 and XP?
Server 2003 performs better than XP, definitely.
Just palpably? I mean, is it like noticeably, like, wow, like snappier?
Again, depending on your hardware, things pop up faster, you interact with things faster. It's more of under the hood in terms of getting information to your hard drive and being able to... if you're in a gaming environment, there are compatibility issues, but you should see better performance, especially when you think of, you know, some of these servers are running 64-bit chips already in terms of, I hesitate to say the word on air, but Itanium and Xeon. I love this machine. I had a dual Xeon one-unit server. Big old fans, terrible. It was a 2.4 gigahertz, hyper-threaded, dual-proc Xeon at home, and that was a great machine. I could develop, I could have three Visual Studios open, Office, eight, you know, Internet Explorers, and be cooking just fine. It's a process of developing software. You got to think there were 3 years between Windows XP and Windows Server 2003. That's 3 years of time to refine your code. That's 3 years of time to clean it up and make it run really strong. And the Windows development is a process. And it's one single base of code, but it, again, has different sets.
Forks, right.
So you're going to see improvement in speed with each successive release. Again, Longhorn's looking for huge speed increases in terms of how your computer interacts, not only because you have better hardware, but because it's managing that hardware better, because people are writing better drivers, and Microsoft is taking baseline driver functionality and pulling that into the operating system. They've done that with just about every... Microsoft's job is to, again, solve problems for people. So in standardizing display models and whatever, and or driver modes, you can simplify your process for driver writers and allow them to create a better experience. And so tying all of this together, Microsoft has an extremely important and extremely difficult task that, you know, I would say probably 30% of the company is involved in at some level in terms of Windows development. Microsoft, for better or worse, drives the industry in terms of the general user experience. It is Microsoft's job to pull everybody kicking and screaming onto what's next. And not everybody makes that transition as well as we all would like. I would love to... say, if you've got a Win16 app, if you're trying to run VisiCalc on your computer, you have some serious mental issues that need to be addressed through therapy or medication.
Certainly.
But there are some business cases that may or may not be valid that require things like that. And so if you're dealing with a mainframe or whatever.
So you really, you'd be one to believe that Longhorn isn't just Windows XP Service Pack 3.
No, it's not. And the message that they're trying to get out is that there's stuff that they're working on that they haven't even been able to talk about yet because it's not ready. And for better or worse, Microsoft took a huge risk with PDC 2003 and really bared all in what they were working on. And it was completely overzealous. And Bill wanted a lot of stuff to get done. And the managers took back and said, we can't do all this. We can't do all this and have a product that's going to ship before the end of the decade. And so when they announced that they couldn't do all this, people were disappointed and they didn't handle it very well. And so Microsoft's risk, what are you going to do when you're somebody who's taking a risk on something for the first time? You enter it very timidly. And if you get bit, you're going to hide away from it. Microsoft jumped out there and said, this is what we're doing. This is what we want to do, with the disclaimer that this may change at any time. Well, they got hit hard by the media and by people who like to see Microsoft fail and that actively work towards making sure their message is such that they will. And so they took a look at that feedback that they got when they made the announcement that WinFS was going to be cut, and they stopped talking. You haven't heard much about Longhorn. My site's been dead for forever because you aren't hearing that much. We pick up traffic when they release a new CTP of Avalon, but I mean, I haven't even seen a build of Longhorn. Scoble saw a couple. I mean, there's so many different variables that get taken into account. And so now Microsoft's saying, okay, we had that experience. We got bit in the butt by it. Here's what we're going to do now, and we're going to be very careful about what we say, and we're not going to talk about things that we aren't relatively sure that we can do, for better or worse. And so they can't win for losing.
The Windows Media stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.